We're going to continue, of course, in our Wicked Women series. And I'll say it again. I'll probably say it every time. But it's not to put down women. It's to try to help women. There's wicked men and wicked women, of course. Enough wickedness to go around. But what we're looking at and trying to emphasize is the wickedness that women face that men don't have to face. We men face a special wickedness that you women don't face, and you women face special wickednesses that we don't face. So it's an attempt to unveil some of these things. You know, for example, Eve faced a wickedness that Adam didn't face. The serpent came to Eve to get into the household, but also into the universe. Wickedness came into the world because of Eve, right? It's a wicked woman. And it says that the woman wasn't deceived. It says that the woman was deceived, the man wasn't. Let me say it right. The woman was deceived, the man was not deceived. See, so many things that men do, we just do. We know they're wicked, we know they're wrong, we just do them. But a lot of times women are just deceived. So that's a point that you face that we don't have to face. And then there's an area that we talked about last time we talked about this with Lot's wife. You know, women are powerful. You women are guiding influences in our lives, in your husband's life, and in the lives of your children. And you can guide us to wickedness, like Lot's wife guided that family, or you can guide us into righteousness. You know, so use your power wisely. There's a wickedness that you'll face that we don't face. And so I just want you to know it's not to put down women. It's to do the opposite. It's to try to reveal to you and identify the wickedness, some of the wickednesses that you're going to have to face so that you won't be a wicked woman. Okay. Now, I don't know how long our series is going to last. I don't like have 4, 5, or 6 that I'm going to do. And I don't have any difficulty doing long series. I mean, I'd do 1, 3, 4, 5 years. It doesn't matter to me. But so, and there's plenty of resources on this one. So I'm not going to run out of resources on it. But my intent here is to discuss and talk about some women that we are not real familiar with. You know, you've heard about Jezebel. You've heard about Delilah. At least you know something about them, heard of something about them. That's not my intent. I want to talk about some of the women that are wicked and did some wicked things, but we don't hear about a lot, so that we can study them and draw from their lives and maybe relate to some of the things that these others have done as well. So that's what my intent is, and so therefore today, what we're going to be talking about is a wicked woman who doesn't even have a name. She's not given a name in the scriptures. We reference her as Potiphar's wife. The scriptures reference her as his master's wife, and I'll show you that in here in just a second. Potiphar's wife. Now, she only has one big scene in all the Bible. And after that, we don't hear about her anymore. We really don't know what happened to her, like we did Lot's wife. So we don't know what really happened to her. But her big scene, she makes a grand entrance. And she's got this one-liner. I mean, this is her opening line. It's not the only thing she says, but it's her opening line. She's going to say it twice. But it's profound. And it tells us so much about this woman. So I want to read it to you. It's in Genesis 39:7. Here it is. And after a while, his master's wife... That's how the Bible references her. Took notice of Joseph and said, and here's a line, come to bed with me. Whoa. That's a big opening line, isn't it? Tells you a lot about a married woman talking to a young man and what she's like. Now, to get to our vixen, our wicked vixen, I got to talk a little bit about the victim, Joseph. Most of you are familiar with Joseph. He's the kid that had a coat of many colors that his dad gave him. He was his dad's favorite child. And so his dad gave him this coat of many colors, which simply says, you're not going to have to work like everybody else. You're just going to have to be special. And his dad is a patriarch, and his name is Jacob, who's later going to be, his name changed to Israel. And it's by him he becomes the father of the nation of Israel. But right now he's Jacob. And Jacob had 12 sons. By 4 women. He married 2 of them, who were sisters, and also his first cousin. How's that going? Then his 2 wives each gave him a woman, a concubine, their own servants. So he's got 4 women. And these 4 women, and Jacob, and these 12 sons and 1 daughter, all live together. And as you would imagine, in an extremely dysfunctional family, complete with hatred, complete with murder, complete with incest, complete with violence. This is the house in which Joseph is coming out of. So you really don't want a biblical household. You don't want a biblical family, right? And when you look at the Bible, you know, the families in the Bible, you don't want one of those. Yeah. What you want is a Christian family, a Christian household. You want a New Testament household. That's what you want. You got one of those, you're going to be good. But you don't want a biblical household. Those things are bad stuff, man. But anyway, what's going to happen here is in a few years, maybe around 10 years from this particular point that I'm beginning at, there's going to be an extreme famine in the land. It's going to be so devastating that everything is going to perish in Canaan. It's that devastating. But God has a plan. And the plan is to get his people, who are going to become a nation, out of the famine and to save them. And what his plan is Joseph. Now, he's got to get Joseph out of the land of Canaan, where this famine is, and being just a cattle herder, you know, just a farmer person, a Hebrew farmer. And he's got to get this guy, this child, this young man, into the palace where he can be the vizier of Egypt and run and control Egypt. So he's got to do this. And so what he's going to do is he's going to take Joseph through this crazy, crazy series of situations to get him there. I mean, crazy situations. And all the time it's saying, and the Lord was with Joseph. So this is God's plan to save him, to save the people of God, and to make sure that they don't perish in this famine. And his plan is Joseph. Now, and he's going to use one man to pull the plan off, Joseph. Do you believe that God can still do that today? Can God take one person and change the history of an entire family from that point on? Can God still do that today? Yes, he can. I mean, if you think about it, a couple of hundred years ago at the most, for most of us, someone, an ancestor of yours, and in some far, that we would call now foreign country, came to America and changed the entire destiny and future of his family or her family. And here you sit. Because of one person changing the course of history. One person can change the course of history. And you're doing that right now. You're changing history right now for generations that are going to come after you. For long term, you're changing right now how you think. You're changing right now how your children think. You're going to be changing how your grandchildren think. That's already three generations right there that you're going to be able to change. And even after that, you can change by sitting here right now. You don't know what God has planned for you. But also, you don't know what you're going to have to go through to get there. There could be some crazy situations. But God has a plan for you. And if you'll trust him, this is the lesson. If you'll trust God, he's going to get you there. And he's going to not bless only you, but he's going to bless your lineage to follow you. Okay, back to Joseph. Now, Joseph's brothers hated him. At least 10 of them did. Hated him. But not just because he had this special robe and cloak and, you know, and he was his dad's favorite. Not just because of that. But because of what God was doing in Joseph. What God was doing is going to use Joseph. So he gives Joseph these obnoxious dreams. I mean, they're dreams about everybody bowing down to Joseph. The whole family is going to be bowing down to Joseph. Mom, dad, the boys, everybody's going to be bowing down to Joseph. And Joseph tells the whole family his dreams, these obnoxious dreams. And the brothers hated him because of the dreams more than they hated him because of the cloak. So one day, Jacob tells Joseph, I want you to go out into the fields. I want you to find your brothers. And I want you to tell me what they're doing. I want you to find out what they're doing, if they're working or if they're not working. I want to know. So he sends Joseph out there into the fields. And his brothers see him coming. And they don't like him. They hate him. And it's time to get vengeance now. So they have a plan. We're going to take this guy. We're going to kill him. So they grab him. They throw him in a pit. And their intention was to kill him. But that's not God's plan. God just happens to have these slave traders coming along, these actually child traffickers. They're coming along, and so they sell Joseph to these slave traders to take him to Egypt. That's God's plan. Right on schedule, right at the right time, right at the right moment, these slave traders just happen by and take Joseph to where God needs Joseph to be to save his people. So let me now read some of the story getting to Mrs. Potiphar in Genesis 39:1. It says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. The Lord was with him. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. He didn't live in the servant quarters. He lived in the house with the master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him, so it becomes apparent that Joseph is godly, that the Lord is with Joseph, when it becomes apparent, it's becoming apparent to everybody, that the Lord was with Joseph and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his, Potiphar's, eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. Potiphar. Now, Potiphar is the captain of the bodyguards of Pharaoh. Potiphar is a bad dude. He's probably come up the ranks, taking people out. He'd take you out. And I see him as a big bad dude. You know, this is Potiphar. And his occupation demanded that. He has to be a bad dude to protect Pharaoh. But he's also an important person. He's an official. Everybody knows who Potiphar is. Everywhere Pharaoh is, there's Potiphar. He's the bodyguard. Wherever Pharaoh ate, Potiphar ate. He was where he talked to Pharaoh. He was right there. Everybody knew who Potiphar was and also knew who Mrs. Potiphar was. And it becomes kind of apparent as you read through the story here that she is more like his trophy wife and he is more like her meal ticket. Also, as we look at him, we see that he's quite wealthy. He's done very well in life. He has an estate. He has land, he has cattle and beasts out there, and Joseph is watching over those, and he has the household, and Joseph is attending all of these things as well. So he's quite wealthy, done really well in life. And also we see that he's a pretty wise person. You know, he seems to be a pretty good judge of character. He judged Joseph's character really well. Joseph was put in. He saw that Joseph was successful and that God was with Joseph and the Lord was with him and blessing him. So he was good judge. He seems to be a pretty good judge of character except for one person. And that's his wife. Now, what's really interesting here about Potiphar is about this whole situation is it keeps saying that the Lord was with Joseph, and he gave him favor. As we finish up our study today, we're going to see that Joseph is going to go to prison. And again, we're going to read, and the Lord was with Joseph and gave him favor. Now, you know, sometimes we just don't understand what's going on in our lives. So sometimes, you know, crazy things happen. I mean, you know, your brothers throw you in a pit. They sell you to child traffickers. You end up in Egypt where you don't know a lick of what they're saying. You can't communicate. You end up here in this situation as a slave, and the Lord is with you, and you're going to end up in prison, and the Lord is with you. That doesn't seem like the Lord is with you. And here's the point that I want to make. God will bless you in your mess. As long as you're attempting to fulfill God's purpose, as long as you're not a closet Christian, as long as you're out there and everybody can see that you're in love with God and that you're a worshiper of God and you're successful and you're trying to do your job and you're trying to follow God's plan for your life, God will bless your mess. He will bless you in your mess, and maybe, just maybe, God put you in that mess so that he could bless you, but also bless your posterity. That he can bless your children and your grandchildren and that whoever's is coming down the road that you're going to be able to influence. That God puts you in that mess so that everybody can be blessed. It's not the devil. God will bless you in your mess as long as you're attempting to follow his plan for you. And there's no telling what kind of mess you're going to find yourself in. Just stay faithful to God, and he will continue to take care of you. I don't want to talk about Joseph any more than I have to, just to make it relevant to us. But Joseph ascends rapidly into the corporate system. He rises rapidly in the ladder of success. And Potiphar puts him as his number one guy, as his attendant, and take care of everything that he has. And the reason that he did this was because it was obvious that the Lord was with Joseph. That Joseph maintained his worship. He wasn't private about it. He was open with his worship. He was open about his love for his God. He was successful. He did what he was supposed to do. He was a successful manager. He was a successful attendant. He took care of administrative things, but he also worshiped his God and he did his job well. And he was youthful. He was young. But the thing about all these additives and attributes, when you're successful, and when as we're about to read, good looking, and when you're intelligent, and when you're trying to do your best, and when you're godly and a worshiper of God, you become a very prime target of wickedness. So when you're really attempting to do well and wickedness comes at you, it's supposed to, because you're a prime target. So let's read now about Joseph's looking good and adding another additive that we haven't yet seen. In verse 6, it says this: Now Joseph was well built and handsome. All right, take that down right there and let me work on that. In all of the Bible, it only gives us five men in which it talks about how good they looked. Well built and handsome. Joseph is the first one. The second one is King Saul. He's the head and shoulders guy, big tall guy. He talks about how handsome he was. King David talks about how handsome and good looking David was. And then David's two sons, Absalom and Adonijah. And all of the Bible, that's the only ones that really comments about how good they looked. I mean, he's a looker. Joseph is a looker. Let me read on now. And after a while, his master's wife, there she is, took notice of Joseph and said, and here's a line, come to bed with me. Now, not only does he have all of these amazing attributes, but he looks good. He's well built and he's handsome. And Mrs. Potiphar notices this and she wants him. She's after him. He is the complete package. He's everything. I read a lot, you know, and study a lot with him. And one writer that I read from wrote it this way. He had serious curb appeal to women. And so he's a good looking guy. And Mrs. Potiphar, she wants him. Now, here's what's interesting. How old is Joseph? How old is Joseph? We don't know exactly at this time how old he was. We do know this, that in Genesis chapter 37 and verse 2, when Jacob sent Joseph out to check out his brothers, he was 17. He's 17 when he goes to Egypt. Thompson Chain Reference Bible attempts to give you the dates and times as it goes through the thing. And according to it, he's still 17. Now, I think a little time has passed. A little time has passed to get to this position where he's at. So let's add some years. Okay, let's say between 17 and 20. This is about his age that we would sort of see him at 17 and 20. Now, he's forbidden fruit. But Mrs. Potiphar wants him. He's a Hebrew. And it is wrong for for an Egyptian woman to hook up with a Hebrew. It's wrong. To the Egyptians, the Hebrews were nothing but farmers and trash and lowlifes. So it was wrong. But he was a perfumed Hebrew. He was a good-looking Hebrew, right? He was an educated Hebrew. He was a smart Hebrew. He looked good. And she wanted him, and she's used to getting what she wants. But he's forbidden fruit. But it should be an easy thing for her. I mean, it appears, as we look at her, I mean, come to bed with me. That's just not something anybody would say. She's obviously experienced at being a nymphomaniac and wanting him. Come to bed with me. And he's, how old? How old is he? 17 to 20, something like that. Do you men remember when you were 17 to 20? Do you remember what your body was telling you and yelling at you? Your testosterone level was out of sight. It was off the roof. And it was screaming at you. He should be easy pickings for her. She wanted him. Now, this story is 37 centuries old. 3,700 years old. Now, as old as it is, it's as current as today's news. And as current as Hollywood, right? Hollywood portrays it as, you know, The Graduate and Mrs. Robinson. Correct? And the news shows it as your son's teacher. Between the time of grammar school, middle school, high school, and college, your son is going to encounter at least one Mrs. Potiphar's. I did. You can tell by the way they sit on the desk. You can tell by the clothes they wear. You can tell by how they look at people. She's a wicked woman. And though for 3,700 years we've been told of the daring audacity of this woman, it doesn't give her name. You would think that a woman with this kind of daring audacity that the scriptures would tell us who she is, but it doesn't give us her name. Just references her as his master's wife. We reference her as Mrs. Potiphar. You know, Potiphar's wife. You would just think. And so, sometimes I'm amazed because it names some women. It names like Jezebel. It names Delilah. It names Rahab the harlot. It names some women. But it doesn't name others. And that was kind of fascinating. Because you see, the point is that she's not remembered for her name. She's remembered for her wickedness. Women, you're going to be remembered more for what you do than your name. I read a lot as I'm preparing for sermons and looking at stuff. And one of the books that I'm reading is a book by Liz Curtis Higgs, and it's Bad Girls of the Bible. It's a good read if you're interested in that kind of thing. So I want to give you a little quote here from her book, and it says, "More than 100 women in the scriptures are simply described in the scriptures as the daughter of, wife of, witch of, woman of, concubine of, widow of, nurse of, queen of, and naturally the mother of." Women, you're probably described and defined as someone's wife or some child's mother. That's who you are. And I was thinking about this, you know, with my wife. I was thinking about it. When I introduce Judy to someone, I say, this is how I do it. I say, this is my wife, Judy. The first thing about her is what she does for me. She's my wife. And then her name is secondary. It's like unimportant. And I went further, you know, thinking about my children. I remember one time Bonnie was introducing her mom to a woman. And she says, this is my mom. And that was it. This is my mom. This is what she does. She's my mom. There wasn't any name included. So the woman stood there for a few minutes, and then she looks at Judy. She says, she shook her hand. She says, I know you're Bonnie's mom, but what's your name? And Lance does the same thing. And say, women, I just want you to see this, is that you're going to do good things and you're going to do bad things. What you're going to be remembered for are the bad things. 3,700 years, this is how the Bible remembers her, as a wicked woman. Remembers her for what she did. And what she wants to do is Joseph. She wants to get Joseph in her bed. Go to bed with me. Go to bed with me. So how did Joseph handle it? What did he do? What would you guys have done? You're 17, 18, 19 years old. What would you do? Verse 8. But he refused. He refused. He's a slave. He can't refuse. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing? She's a wicked woman. How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? So he explained to her. He explained to her why he refused her. And he says, listen, why I can't. He's been so good to me. My master has been so good to me. He's blessed me so much. And he's entrusted me with everything. Everything I can have access to. I can do anything. I have access to everything except you, and you're his wife. He says, I can't do this wicked thing. And he says, and beyond that, beyond any of that, it's a sin against my God. Do you think that slowed her down? See, it doesn't slow a wicked woman down. She doesn't give up. She's going to wear him out. She's going to wear him down. So look at the next verse, verse 10. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day after day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. He's beginning to loathe her. He dislikes her. He doesn't want to be around her. And as the song sort of goes, well, here's to you, Mrs. Potiphar. Joseph loathes you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And she's not happy. she's not happy. It was about the best I've ever done. And she's not having just a moment of wickedness. She's not having just a weak moment. She's having a day after day weak moment. She wants to wear him down. She's after this young boy. She's after him. She's a pedophile. She's a nymphomaniac. Verse 11. One day. Verse 11. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties. And none of the household servants was inside. Somebody's got a plan, don't they? And she caught him by his cloak and said, this cloak thing keeps getting him in trouble. Caught him by this cloak and said, come to bed with me. And that's the only thing she can think of. That's the only thing on her mind is going to bed with this boy. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Now, she wasn't, she's about as discreet as concrete. You know, I mean, she's just all into it. She is the closest thing in the scriptures to a nymphomaniac that you'll read about. I mean, Delilah had her thing going on with Samson. And there were prostitutes that are mentioned. But nothing like this. Jezebel didn't even do this kind of thing. She's just mean. Just kill people. This is a wicked woman. And this cloak thing. You know, it keeps getting him in trouble. Joseph, you just don't need to wear cloaks. But, you know, I mean, it got him in trouble with his brothers, got him thrown into the pit, you know, sold as a slave. Now it's got him in trouble with Potiphar. Verse 13. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. What? Anybody here scream? Joseph's the one that screamed. You know, they're outside. Did you hear a scream? I didn't hear a scream. There's something fishy going on. And when he heard me scream out for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. Next verse, verse 16. She kept his cloak beside her. Now watch this. Until who? His master came home. Not her husband. Until his master came home. Oh, you're going to refuse me for your master? We'll see. We'll see what your master has to say about this. Oh, your master, you trust, you don't want to betray your master. Well, we'll see what your master thinks about this. Then she told him this, what? This story. She's fabricating this story. That Hebrew slave, you, it's your fault, you brought us, came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed, she's into the screaming thing, as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. See, she was saying, you refuse me, Joseph? I'll get you, boy. I'll get you, boy. You know, a wicked woman scorned. A wicked woman who has been scorned is a terrifying event. You know, we've all heard the saying, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, like a scorned woman. Wow. And what's she saying here? Okay, big boy. You refuse me? Let's see what your master has to say now. Let's see what he has to say now. You want to betray him? Well, okay. We'll see how he handles you. And your God that thinks I'm wicked? Let's see your God get you out of this one. You think this is sin? Let's see him handle this one. Let's see your God take you through this one. She's a wicked woman. Verse 19. Then his master heard the story. And you know, you just get this little thing in here. His wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. It's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. It's never the wicked woman's fault. It's the husband's fault. It's the children's fault. It's the boss's fault. It's always somebody else's fault. It's never her fault. When she told him this, how he treated me, he burned with anger. Now, this was interesting to me. He burned with anger, but who, against who did his anger burn? It doesn't say. Now, we think it would be Joseph, but the way this rolls out, it couldn't have been. And I'll show you what I'm talking about. His anger, he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, okay? But look, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, not incarcerated, were confined. It wasn't a work prison. It wasn't, you know, a death row prison. It's where the king, it was a cushion prison. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. The Lord was with him. And he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. And before long, Joseph is running the prison. And the Lord is with him in prison. I mean, sometimes you don't want the Lord to be with you. I mean, you don't, Lord, if we got to do it this way, just find somebody else. You know? But the Lord is with him. It's a constant theme in his life. Now, I think that Mr. Potiphar knew his wife far better than we suppose. I think he knew her better than we give him credit for. Because see, what should have happened to Joseph is he should have been a dead man. I mean, a Hebrew slave attempting to rape an Egyptian woman, and not just any Egyptian woman. This is Potiphar's wife. He's an official. He should be a dead man if he believed that story. He would be a dead man if he believed that story. But instead, he's put into, he had to do something. He puts him in this cushion prison. And it's probably not much different, if at all, different from where he was with Potiphar. But he had to do something. And before long, Joseph is running the thing. And it's here. You see, what God does with all of us and does with Joseph is he takes him through these steps, these crazy, crazy events and situation, these crazy steps to get him to where he wants Joseph to be so that Joseph can become what God wants him to become. He throws him in a pit. He gets him sold to slave traders. He brings him to Potiphar's house and he goes through this situation with Potiphar. And he's in jail. He's in prison. But what's going to happen is he's there and he's going to start interpreting dreams. He's going to interpret dreams, and eventually he's going to interpret Pharaoh's dream. And he's going to interpret it so well, with such excellence, that he's going to become the vizier of all of Egypt. Now, we think the vizier is like second in command of Pharaoh, but I've got you the scripture there, but it's in Genesis chapter 44 and verse 18. No, that means he's equal with Pharaoh. He's the same as Pharaoh. He got to be the person that God intended him to be so that he could save his family, the eventual nation. He could provide for them land, the land of Goshen, where they could become a nation. And he had to go through these crazy things. But as long as he stayed faithful to God and was open with his worship and did what he was supposed to do in life, God was with him. And God blessed him. And he was able to save his family, who became the nation of Israel. But what happened to her? We know what became of Joseph, but what became of her? What became of Mrs. Potiphar? Well, we're not told. That's all we're told about her right there. But we do know this. We know this for a fact, that for 3,700 years, we remember her wickedness. We remember what she did. And she's been talked about and discussed for 3,700 years because of the wicked woman that she was. You know, I have to think about it just a little bit. Here is Joseph going to become vizier. I wonder what she thought when she heard that Joseph was vizier. You know, do you think she trembled? Oh, my God. I lied on him. He's going to get me. And probably Potiphar might have trembled a little bit, too. But did Joseph execute vengeance? No, because Joseph saw everything in life as long as we're serving God, as long as we're openly worshiping Him, as we're, you know, we're going through life doing the best we can to follow His plan for our lives, and as long as we're trying to be successful in life, that God would be with us. And he saw this as just God's plan. That's how Joseph saw it. He never executed vengeance. He just didn't do that. He did that with his brothers. That's the way he approached life. But what happened to her? I don't know. Nobody knows. But do you know a woman like this? Do you know somebody like this? See, these are miserable women. They're lustful women, and they're never satisfied with a man. They can't be satisfied. Men are nothing more than conquest for them. And they become marked women. Society talks about them. People talk about them. They're marked. Their husband can never trust them. Their children are embarrassed by their own mother. Other women don't want to be around them. And definitely don't want their husbands around them, nor their children around them. That's what became of her. That's what becomes of every Mrs. Potiphar. So what can we draw? What can we learn from Mrs. Potiphar? What can we learn? Well, don't be like Mrs. Potiphar. That's the wickedness. But we also learn in this story that if we will allow and follow God's plan for our lives. That He will take us, even though we go through some crazy, crazy circumstances that we cannot understand. But as long as we maintain our worship with Him, God's going to take us through these circumstances and bless our lives in our mess. And take us and bless us and our posterity. Forever and forever and forever. That's what we can learn. So here's to you, Mrs. Potiphar. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let me pray. Father, thank you for our time. Thank you for your amazing word. Thank you for being open and real with your word. Not hiding it and not sugarcoating it, but putting it out there like it is. So that we can see the wickedness and do the best we can to avoid the wickedness and learn what we need to learn. So, Father, I pray now for every single person here, man and woman, the Lord will learn from this. We'll avoid the wickedness. We'll run from wickedness. And we'll stay best we can in your plan for us because we know you have one. And if we will, you're going to bless us in our mess. But you're also going to bless our children and our grandchildren and our posterity to come forever. So, Father, I ask you now to implant this into our hearts and our lives and let us learn something from this amazing story. Thank you, Lord.